from the far reaches of the galaxy.
Oh, what is it?
Steve Oteo in the AM brings you Theology Thursday with Pastors Brian Nixon and Jared Petro. Get your questions in at studio@star88.fm.
And we have a pattern now of mass shootings in this country that has no parallel anywhere else in the world. And there are some steps we could take, not to eliminate every one of these mass shootings, but to improve the odds that they don't happen.
I've had to make statements like this too many times. Communities have had to endure tragedies like this too many times.
We come together filled with sorrow for the 13 Americans that we have lost, with gratitude for the lives that they led, and with a determination to honor them through the work we carry on. I have come here tonight as an American who, like all Americans, to pray with you today and will stand by you tomorrow. And the federal government stands ready to do whatever is necessary to bring whoever is responsible for this heinous crime to justice.
All of us are heartbroken by what's happened, and I offered the thoughts and prayers not only of myself and Michelle, but also of the country as a whole.
And each time I learn the news, I react not as a president, but as anybody else would, as a parent. In the hard days to come, that community needs us to be at our best as Americans, and I will do everything in my power as president to help.
The lives that were taken from us were unique. The memories their loved ones carry are unique, and they will carry them and endure long after the news cameras are gone.
You know, any shooting is troubling. Obviously, this reopens the pain of what happened at Fort Hood 5 years ago.
The country has to do some soul searching about this. This is becoming the norm, and we take it for granted in ways that, as a parent, are terrifying to me.
The good news is I am confident that the outpouring of unity and strength and fellowship and love across Charleston today indicates the degree to which those old vestiges of hatred can be overcome. And each time this happens, I'm going to bring this up. Each time this happens, I am going to say that we can actually do something about it, but we're going to have to change our laws.
That's President Obama throughout the last couple years of his presidency responding to a mass shooting. And sadly, we are at 355 mass shootings in the year 2015 alone. Welcome to Theology Thursday. Steve Oteo and Pastor Brian Nixon hanging out in studio. And obviously a very heavy day as we once again have to discuss another tragedy in our nation.
So. Yeah, very much. It is a heavy day, and first and foremost, our thoughts and prayers do go out to the families affected by this. I'm well familiar with that area, having lived in Southern California, and have driven by some of those locations I watched on TV as they began to unfold. So it really is a tragedy, and rightfully so. Some of the questions people are asking right now, be it the daily news or some Facebook posts or Twitters, tweets out there about where's God in all of this? Why isn't God fixing this? And this is going to lead us to probably one of our dominant themes of this particular Theology Thursday about, you know, why is there evil? And if God, why evil?
Yeah, absolutely. It has been just as a dad, you know, we heard from the president a moment ago, but as a father, I echo that sentiment. You know, as I was at the dinner table last night talking to Jack and Luke about what happened in California yesterday, and just discussing the fact that a human being and, you know, his possible girlfriend, whatever, walked into his place of employment and killed 14 people. It's unreal how this is happening, yeah. and it's becoming the norm more often than not. We're seeing it and not seeing it in the news. Yesterday, we saw this story, but it wasn't even the only mass shooting.
No, there was
yesterday.
Also, there was something in Pasadena.
Man,
because at first they thought they might be related,
right.
but they weren't. And then there was also one in Georgia.
Yeah, in Georgia, we saw something last week. Was it New Orleans? At a birthday party in a park with 300 people.
Not to mention the Planned Parenthood attack.
Right, Planned Parenthood attack. And so as we look at it,
that's just in the last week.
355 shootings this year alone, and that's more than the number of days we've had in the year 2015. We have already beat the number of shootings that happened in 2014, and I believe they said it just about toppling 2013, and here it is December 3rd. So again, this is the topic of discussion, and it was presented by the New York Daily News yesterday when this happened. 14 dead in California mass shooting. Their headline is "God isn't fixing this." They took this moment to take a political stance because then they showed Ted Cruz, Lindsey Graham, Paul Ryan, and Dr. Rand Paul their tweets. Ted Cruz's was "Our prayers are with the victims and families and the first responders in San Bernardino." Lindsey Graham, "Thoughts and prayers with San Bernardino." Paul Ryan, "Please keep the victims of San Bernardino, California in your prayers." Dr. Rand Paul, "My thoughts and prayers are with the victims, families, and brave first responders." We heard the president use those sentiments as well, "Thoughts and prayers." And yet the New York Daily News used these words, "God isn't fixing this. As latest batch of innocent Americans are left lying in pools of blood, cowards who could truly end gun scourge continue to hide behind meaningless platitudes," end quote. That was the New York Daily News' response, that prayers obviously aren't enough. And in fact, President Obama said himself yesterday when addressing the nation that, you know, time and again he said this, that our thoughts and prayers are not enough. He didn't say that it was meaningless platitudes. He did say that it wasn't enough. So we wanted to talk about this today because obviously this is where we go instantaneously when a tragedy strikes. We do go forth in prayer for the families. We wanted to talk about the power of prayer. We wanted to talk about these things.
Well, yeah, these are very, very important questions.
Yeah.
And interestingly enough, this idea of why God and evil can coexist together has been with humanity since the early dawn. People have always been asking this. But let me just frame it in its larger theological construction. And it's called theodicy, or theodicy, some people would pronounce it. But it's basically the word, and I'm going to spell it for those who are listening. It's T-H-E-O-D-I-C-Y. And in its simple definition, it is just answering the question of why God permits or allows evil. And the idea is something goes like this. Why would a loving God, who is omnipotent, who's omnipowerful, who has, you know, the universe in his hands, why would he allow evil? And this is one of those questions that, in some sense, have plagued believers in God throughout the years, throughout centuries, throughout millennia. People have always said that. And this isn't a new argument, by the way.
Right.
This goes back to Greeks, and before Greeks, the early Judaism had to deal with, the book of Job, and others. So this is an ongoing question as to why a good, loving, all-powerful God would allow evil.
And people are high-fiving it, unfortunately, yesterday. I mean, there were those that called this newspaper cover deplorable, others hailed it as brilliant. Liz Herron, who is the executive editor of the Huffington Post, tweeted, "New York Daily News not pulling any punches." And I mean, it's not the first time that a newspaper has done something to create a headline in order to sell papers.
And it definitely won't be the last.
Yeah,
at the same time, I mean, so many people were high-fiving this.
And this newspaper really it's doing its job in that it's, you know, raising a question, and it's doing it, A, to have a philosophical discussion, an existential discussion, if you will, but two, to sell papers.
I mean, it
is a business. But let's get back to the core of you know, this concept. Let me just give you a really straight-across biblical answer too evil.
Yeah.
And this has so many layers, so many things to unpack that sadly in this time frame we're not going to be able to do it. But the general question is, why does God allow evil? And the ultimate answer is, we don't know. We don't know why God, but we do know that it's within his purposes, that he's allowing it for a reason. And a lot of people would say, well, when did evil enter in the universe? Some people point to the fall. And I would have to say that is when evil entered in the human realm, but we would have to say that evil was even predated the fall. Because Satan, the Bible is clear about this, Satan fell, Satan rebelled against God, and God allowed it. And that fall, that satanic fall, that evil fall, influenced the world through Adam and Eve, and through Adam and Eve, not only humanity, but all creation has been dealing with this very thing called evil. So when we get to a point where two people could walk into a place and start mowing down people with a gun, you know, these are natural questions. Why God? Why God? Why God? But the point is, the good news is, none of this is beyond God's control. Biblically speaking, God, though he allows it, doesn't condone it. Right. Though God allows it, isn't supporting it. And up front, God has presented an answer. And that answer is found in Jesus Christ. A lot of people would say, well, God is not dealing with evil. Yes, he is. Jesus Christ is God's response to evil in this world. The good news of the gospel is how God is dealing with it in this realm of humanity.
Yeah.
And you know, when evil is at its worst and rearing its ugly head in such times as this, we as Christians have the opportunity to proclaim the good news, to talk about the peace and the love and the reconciliation of God with the world through Jesus Christ as a means to answer the question of evil. Unlike a loving God who's just kind of out, you know, out in the universe going, oh man, just another bad thing. God is in the midst of this through the Spirit, through the, you know, if you will, the lineage of Christ, yeah, working in people's hearts, and he is answering this with goodness, love, and joy. Christ truly is the answer to this.
So I have a question as we take a look at this and examine it again, because it seems more often than not, anytime a great tragedy strikes, this is the conversation. I find it more difficult to blame God when a human being acts. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
a lot
sure.
of times when it's like, oh, this hurricane or this this thing wiped out, you know, where was God? And in this moment, there are human beings who made a choice to strike against other human beings. And this is the commentary that's coming across is, well, God's not doing anything. How do we as Christians respond when the culture says, you know, is responding in this way? Because sadly, already, you know, you could go read the comments on this story itself on CNN, as to, you know, both sides, of course, coming out of the woodwork. I've read deplorable things from atheists. I've also read deplorable things from Christians.
Mm-hmm.
So how do we respond when, you know, Facebook gets hit with this article, and, you know, you've got the Facebook friend who says, yeah, man, you know, obviously this is right, and you know, gun control, whatever, blah, 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 prayer's nothing, yada, yada, yada. What should our response be theologically? How ought we to respond? Or do we respond?
Well, I do. I think we do need to respond. Anytime there is a question that the world poses regarding God, regarding the biblical worldview, we have to respond. We have to respond reasonably, intelligently, but compassionately as well. So in a situation like this, I think our first knee-jerk reaction should be one of love and compassion, that we come out of the chute empathizing and praying for those affected and those people who are confused over this. Because let's admit it, we're all humans, and we're all in this fellowship, this brotherhood, if you will, of humanity. And when something tragic like this happens, we have to come alongside as fellow humans and hug each other and pray with one another. And so there's that element. But then there's the theological and biblical element. We need to give a response response to this. And that's where Christians need to get into the habit. And Steve-O, Matteo, you guys know that we have said this over and over. One of the main reasons we have this program is to equip people. Mm. But Christians need to become equipped. We need to give answers for the reason of the hope that lies within us. So what I would do, if I was a Christian, or I am a Christian, but if I was someone trying to make sense of this,
yeah,
I would go and find books or find resources by Christians who have thought long and hard about this. And I'm going to just rattle off a few,
yeah,
just so people could know that this isn't something new. People have been thinking about this for a long time. But Ravi Zacharias wrote a book called Why Suffering. I would encourage Christians to pick that up and start to dialogue and discuss and ingest this. On a more very philosophical heady is Alvin Plantinga wrote a book called God, Freedom, and Evil.
Did you say more heady than Ravi Zacharias?
Oh, yeah. Alvin's one of the leading philosophers.
Beenix let me borrow that book.
Yeah.
Oh, that's
Alvin,
right.
Alvin Plantinga.
Make it through.
Yeah,
and Alvin that's like his intro to Alvin Plantinga.
Yeah.
Like, this is for the masses.
Yeah. He's a real deal philosopher.
Okay.
And then you have Norman Geisler's If God, Why Evil.
Yeah.
And then you have William Dembski, who's interesting. He's a scientist, and he takes this from a scientific point of view, but it's called The End of Christianity. My point is this. Christians need to equip themselves. Hmm. So you handle it compassionately, and then you handle it theologically. We need to provide answers. And then I think you handle it prayerfully.
Okay.
And that's the idea where you just need to be praying about situations, opportunities that you could share with someone who's going through this, that you can give insight into why God would allow this. You know, we talk about Alvin Plantinga. And there's a lot of different stuff that you could get of his thought processes of why God will allow evil. But I'm not even saying that you need to get philosophical. Just understand some basic components. And that yes, God's still in control. Yes, God has allowed this, yeah, but ultimately for his good purposes. But because God allows it doesn't mean he condones it. He's not advocating it. He's not supporting it. That God has given an answer, and the answer is Jesus Christ. God is offsetting sin and evil in the world through Jesus Christ. And one day that consummation will come when God's kingdom is pronounced and finalized with Christ's second coming.
So then my response question, and of course, you know, the purpose of Theology Thursday is to get people to think, and so I'm gonna take a moment to play devil's advocate.
Sure, please.
You know, you lovingly, kindly respond to this tragedy on Facebook with what you've stated, and the response to your sweet, kind-hearted Facebook, you know, post or whatever is venom-filled hatred towards Christianity and mockery of your prayers, calling it meaningless platitudes. My question is, how do we as Christians respond in this culture, or should we? Because sadly, again, reading comments, I'm less concerned about how to respond to if evil, you know, if there's evil in the world, then obviously there's no God, blah, blah, blah. We've done that. We've talked about that many a times. My question to you now is, how do we respond to the culture that just doesn't care about your meaningless platitudes without quarreling?
Well, that's
or do we quarrel?
That's why I said we need to start off lovingly and compassionately.
Start off.
We need to just say, hey, we're in this as human beings.
Yeah.
We're being affected and suffering on this. I don't care what religious viewpoint. Are you atheist? Are you a polytheist?
Yeah.
Are you panentheism?
Yeah.
Are you a monotheist? Whatever. But as human beings, this is a tragedy. We don't ultimately understand why this would go. You know, obviously, as this particular shooting begins to unfold, we're going to get more and more answers.
Right.
But the point is, we come with it in love and in compassion and, you know, a hug, a Facebook post of saying, hey, I understand. I feel your pain. I get what you're coming from. But then you could go to the next level. But there are answers to these.
Yeah.
There are great people throughout the ages who have thought long and hard about this. And then thirdly, you know, let me pray for you. Give me an opportunity to allow God to show himself and to provide the answer. So I think the strategy is one, love, you know?
Yeah.
Answer and pray.
Okay.
That's how I would sandwich it.
Okay. Love, answer, pray. But your prayers are meaningless platitudes, so why would I want your prayers?
Well, that's where a lot of people are going to be upset. Yeah. They're not going to be understanding. And mind you, everyone comes to every situation in this world with a worldview.
Oh, yeah.
And so an atheist is obviously going to look at this situation with a completely different set of lenses than a Christian. Yeah. They're going to look at this as just another, demonstration that there's no God. You guys are saying there's a loving God, which, by the way, is pointless banter on their part, because they're saying, on one hand, hey, this is just example of a non-loving God not being there. But the reality is they're having a standard upon which that they're measuring it to.
Yeah.
And it is that you shouldn't be killing. Well, where did they get that standard that you shouldn't be killing? Obviously, there is a universal moral law. So, contrary to an atheist point of view of using this against God, it actually is saying that it is for God, because there is a universal moral standard that we all know that this is wrong.
Yeah.
And I don't care if you're an atheist, a Christian, Muslim, or whatever. We know that this type of action is wrong because it's that moral law.
Absolutely.
But the point is, there are going to be those people who will respond negatively against God in these situations, trying to foist or push their perspective on this issue.
I like that use of foist.
Yeah. So real quick, it is Theology Thursday. Pastor Brian Nixon, Steve Oteo hanging out with you. And an instant question arose when we were talking about all of the resources, Ravi Zacharias' book. You mentioned a few different resources.
Yeah,
to remind everybody that we do have those available at Parchment's bookstore.
Yep. As a matter of fact, those four that I mentioned, God, Freedom, Evil, Why Suffering, If God, Why Evil, and The End of Christianity, are all now up on the
on it this morning,
The Theology Thursday corner. And again, well, Steve, because we're passionate about trying to get people to think.
Yes.
To think biblically, to think theologically, and to provide answers. That's the reason for this broadcast.
Right, absolutely. And so this one, like before we even hit the show, you're like, hey, Artie hit up the end cap at Parchment's bookstore.
That's
we have
cool.
an end cap at our bookstore here on Calvary's campus, 4001 Osuna Road Northeast, a Theology Thursday end cap. The resources we talk about here on the show are available, and maybe you're like, dude, but I'm podcasting you in another state.
Mm-hmm.
Parchments.com. Another way that you can get those resources.
But the point is, and here's even one other thing that we could encourage our listeners to do, is to actually just get the Bible and read.
Imagine that.
Read select sections that really will help explain this.
Yeah.
So, if someone wanted to read about how evil and sin influenced humanity, you would go to, Genesis chapter 3.
Mm-hmm.
If someone wanted to read about how, evil and the rebellion of Satan, you would go to Ezekiel.
Mm-hmm.
If you want to know how God deals with elements of evil and sin in the Old Testament, you would go to the book of Job. If you want to know how God in our modern era is dealing with sin and evil and suffering, you go to the Gospels. Jesus Christ, I can't overemphasize this as much. Martin Luther put it as such. It's called a theology of the cross.
Mm.
And we can get very theological and philosophical on all of this type of stuff. And don't get me wrong, I love talking philosophy and theology.
That's how this show came to be.
But the reality is, Luther's so spot on when the theology of the cross. You want to know what God is doing in the world? You look at the cross.
Yeah.
You want to know how God has responded to evil and pain and suffering? You look at the cross. If you want to know the answer to pain and suffering and evil, you look at the cross. It's called the theology of the cross. God gave his answer in Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And when we receive Jesus Christ as Lord and Savior, we are transformed. As Paul would say, we're actually moved from darkness to light.
Yeah.
We're transposed is what Paul uses there. But when we're doing that, God is using us as part of the solution to combat darkness in this world. We are, if you will, building God's kingdom. We're kingdom builders. So we're basically given a brick. You are saved. God saves you. And he says, hey, Steve-O, here's a brick. Now go help build the kingdom. And we're all adding different bricks. And God is building this fortification. Interestingly enough, by the way, another very influential guy, and I didn't name this book because sadly we don't have it in our bookstore, which we should, because it is one of the best, in my opinion, simple versions. But a scientist of yesteryear, Dr. A.E. Wilder Smith, he had 3 earned scientific doctorates. He was a British scientist, but he wrote several books. Is This a God of Love? He wrote one on evil, and he uses that very illustration, this idea, in his book. He talks about after World War II, when British was bombed by Hitler, you know, the face of evil at the time, and one of the cathedrals, you know, were hit. And he uses this beautiful illustration of the rebuilding of this cathedral, of what God is doing in the world. Yeah. Though evil may strike, though evil may bomb, though there are times when what we think is beautiful happens, God still, and listen to what A.E. Wilder Smith does here. He says, God still will use and people will rebuild. But here's A.E. Wilder Smith's point. What did they have to do to reconstruct the cathedral? They had to go back to the blueprints. Mm. So A.E. Wilder Smith's point is this. We have to go back to the blueprints of what God yearns for humanity. And of course, the blueprints are God's presence, his love, his justice, his goodness, and then using Luther's theology of the cross, looking to Jesus Christ. He is that answer.
I'm so glad you just said his love, his justice, because as I hear the analogy of each of us getting a brick to help build the kingdom, mm-hmm. sadly, 50% of the time, us as Christians grab that brick and hit somebody over the head with it instead of building up the kingdom and potentially are using that brick for destruction. Because I look at this story, I look at the fact that, and if you're just joining us in Theology Thursday, we're discussing the San Bernardino shooting yesterday, and the fact that the New York Daily News took this story as an opportunity to showcase the thought, their thought, that God isn't real, that God isn't doing anything. The headline is, God isn't fixing this as latest batch of innocent Americans are left lying in pools of blood. Cowards who could truly end gun scourge continue to hide behind meaningless platitudes. They then posted shots of different tweets from different Republican politicians saying, you know, our thoughts and prayers go out to you, and they highlight the word prayers as a way to kind of attack the thought of prayer in this time. So unfortunately, when you look at the comment section of these stories, it's nasty on both sides.
Yeah, it is.
So we talk about God's love and his justice, because I have a righteous indignation at this point when I hear these stories and I see these things, and I want to attack as well. I want to pick up that brick and I want to throw it. We discuss how Christians should respond in these times of tragedy, but how do we respond in times of rage, if you will, this venom against Christianity?
Yeah.
Because my immediate, I desire to go, oh, and yes, and attack, and here's all the knowledge I have within me to destroy you with words. But that's not fixing anything either by responding.
How did Jesus respond?
That's obviously, and that, I mean, again, look at my WWJD bracelet.
Again, we go back to theology of the cross.
Right.
Jesus responded in love. Now, interestingly enough, in cases with religious leaders, Jesus responded with some pretty strong, righteous anger. It was justified anger. But usually, when you see that, most of the cases, not all of them, but most of the cases were towards people of false religious views. Yeah. They were the quote-unquote religious people. When they were your common folk, you know, Roman centurions, adulterous women, people who were sick, Jesus responded in compassion and in love. Mm. So I think we need to look to Jesus in these cases. As I said, not only is Jesus the answer of how God is fighting against evil and suffering in the world, but more than that, Jesus is our model upon which we need to base our lives on. That's the whole point of what we call the Sermon on the Mount. Jesus is giving us kingdom living principles. Yeah. Now, are we ever going to live imperfectly? No, because we're sinners.
Right.
But what we can do is hold those up as the ideal, knowing that Christ fulfilled them, and in Jesus Christ are the perfections that he expounds there, but they're also, if you will, the blueprint upon which we need to build our life.
So here's a question. Looking at this from that perspective, is it then selfishness and not for the gain of Christ's kingdom to attack? Because as we think about it, why is it that we as Christians feel like we have to defend? I don't want to judge hearts here and go, well, obviously they're just being selfish, but it sounds like it could come down to a place of pride and not a place of...
Yeah, and that's where you have to check your heart, because I do think, biblically speaking, we are required to give answers. And that's why I went back. You know, Peter is clear. We need to give answers to the hope that lies within.
It's how we give them.
It's exactly right.
Okay.
It's our attitude. It's the attitude upon which, if we're just giving answers to demolish and put down people to show how dumb they are and, you know, how ridiculous their view is, we need to have an attitude check. But if we're giving answers because they're legitimate questions that need real, reasoned answers, then our attitude should be one of love and compassion and hope that those people would begin to understand where we're coming from. Sadly, a lot of people in the church provide answers for the first reason. They do it just to mock and to stir things up and create more division. I know a couple weeks ago we talked about this Starbucks thing, and this guy created this whole hoopla over this, and he made a Facebook post primarily just to create controversy. I think what we need to do is create not necessarily
love
controversy. Exactly.
We need to controversy of love.
Hashtag love traversy.
We need to create exactly a movement of love whereby we're providing answers, keeping Christ the central facet of what we're doing.
Okay, man. Question. Beyond, this is Theology Thursday, so we're discussing theology.
Yes.
Discussing theories about God. We're discussing the biblical response and all that. So beyond all of these things, I totally understand why prayer is getting called a meaningless platitude. Number one, because it's being labeled that because, number one, the people think it's completely ineffective.
Right.
They're like, you guys are crying out to a God who obviously does not care what is happening. Now, the Christian response is, oh, he cares. He cared enough to send his son to die on the cross and raise from the dead, and we can all have a relationship with him. Got it.
Right.
Still a meaningless platitude to people that don't believe in God. So I can sit there and compassionately say that. I can say it out of anger, even if I think it's righteous anger. You know, I can, and I think a lot of that comes into because we're all trying to figure out, like, who is to blame for this.
Right. Mm-hmm.
So, like, from the Christian, it's like, well, because most of the responses you see, I guarantee, are, and you bringing up that guy that made that video, like I can just see him in my head right now making a new video where he's like, I'll tell you why this is happening. It's because of homosexual marriage. It's because of this. It's because of this. When in, you know, in effect, we're just placing blame. That's all we're doing.
Yeah.
And the real thing is we're all sinners. We know that. It's just we're drawing lines and saying, this is your fault. And then they're like, no, this is your fault because you guys are giving out meaningless platitudes and you're not actually doing anything. So my question is, beyond all of this, beyond our response, where we are either defending or whatever the gospel compassionately or out of anger or whatever, what do we actually do?
Yeah, let me. That is a really good question because we're now finally getting to the prayer aspect.
Yeah.
And let me just remind, let's just define what prayer is basically. Prayer is, simply put, a conversation, a discussion with God. Now, there's various forms of prayer.
Yeah.
There's prayers of intercession where we're praying for people. There's prayers of you know, adoration where we're praising God. Jesus, of course, gave us the model prayer. And in that model prayer, we have seven components. And, you know, you could go and find many resources where those components are discussed. You know, but basically, there's the component of praise. There's the component of intercessory prayer. Mm-hmm. There's the component of asking for our daily needs. Mm-hmm. And, you know, and then there's a prayer of forgiveness. So these, if Jesus is the model for us and he gives us the model prayer, we should follow the components of that. But that aside, mm-hmm. let's look at now the bigger principle of prayer. Is prayer for God? No. Mm-hmm. I'm going to answer that question. God doesn't need us to be praying because he's going to change his mind necessarily. Mm-hmm. It's not like God is up there going, oh man, if only these five people pray more, I'm going to go ahead and change my mind. Now, mind you, there are a lot of people that would say that prayer changes God's mind. But that is not good biblical theology.
Yeah, David Crowder.
Yeah, well, they get into open theology and process theology and so on and so forth, which is another discussion altogether.
We do not have enough time.
We do
for
not.
That can
but
of worms.
But prayer is primarily for the prayer.
Yeah,
it's for us to give thanks, to commune, to discuss with God what it is, and then God, according to his will enact it as he sees fit. So think about it this way. And we'll do it in relationship to evil. So, you know, we don't know the good purposes for all evil, right? We don't know why God is allowing it. There may be some purposes, there may not be. And so we go on this, next to say, well, why would an all good God, who knows all things, why would he allow this? Why would he allow it? So we'd have to conclude that some evil seems to us to have no good purpose. Mm. But then we go, but an all good God has good purposes for everything. So even evil that seems to have no good purpose does have a good purpose. So therefore, there is a good purpose for all suffering, even that which we cannot explain. And C.S. Lewis, in his books, The Problem of Pain, discusses this idea that suffering is God's megaphone. It's God's way to keep us focused, if you will, in check. It's a methodology by which God is using it to shape us, to mold us. And it hurts. And though we don't know ultimately the answers, we have to understand that Jesus tells us to keep seeking, to keep praying, to keep knocking, to keep asking. Why? Because in doing so, we're aligning ourselves more and more with the will of God and how God is working in building his kingdom. And sometimes those prayers mm-hmm. hurt.
And mm-hmm. I think another thing to focus on in this instance, when we talk about the New York Daily Times and their headline and the idea of prayer as a meaningless platitude, I got to be honest, I myself am convicted. I started writing words down because I feel this conviction, and that a lot of times I'm guilty of this. When the gospel is presented, I hate to use the word like unauthentically. I'm trying to think of the word.
Inauthentically.
In a way that seems quote unquote cheesy to me. Mm-hmm. It doesn't make the gospel less real. It just makes that presentation less real. But I'm absolutely guilty of it when it comes to, you know, the Christianese type phrases, mm-hmm. because I go, I heard that growing up, and there's no heart behind it. There's no power behind it. Wait, there is power and there's truth behind it. It's just that the presenter, if you will. And so when the paper says meaningless platitudes, let's be honest, when you're walking by somebody in the morning, you go, hey, how's it going? And they go, good. You go, good. And you just keep walking because it's just a meaningless thought that you're mm-hmm. not actually putting forth anything into. I was reminded of our staff birthday cards. I mean, yep. It seems like every other day I'm signing a birthday card for another person on staff, and I'm like, happy birthday, so-and-so. Okay, cool. Boom, boom, boom. Signed it. Okay, I got work to do. And you're not thinking about it. Mm-hmm. From the president down to every other politician on the planet, I can't judge their heart and know whether it was authentic or not. But the first thing we say is, man, thoughts and prayers going out to the families. Mm-hmm. But are our thoughts really bent that way? Are our prayers really leaning towards them?
That's a good point.
Because the weight of our words are so real, but we don't think about the gravity of that. We don't think about the weight that they carry when we meaninglessly go, "How's it going? Good. All right, man. Cool to see you. God bless. All right. Oh, something. This sucks. Oh, man. Praying for you. All right, I gotta go."
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that the power of prayer.
Yeah, the power of prayer is there because ultimately prayer is for the prayer. It's not like God needs. You know, he's up there going, man. I need all this. God is all powerful. He's omnipotent. He's omnipresent. God has all these classical attributes. Mm-hmm. The prayer is for the prayer. It's to align ourselves with God's will. And I think when we're doing that, when we're praying, when we're seeking, when we're knocking, when we're asking, what we're going to find out is that we are aligning ourselves with God's will. And because look at how Jesus says, how he concludes his great prayer, "Thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." So all these other things, though we could ask and knock, God may not answer them. That's according to God's will and purposes. So when we look at something like this, you know, and you're praying, hey, I buried a child. You know, my prayer was, "Lord, save little Riley. Let Riley live. Wouldn't it be cool, Lord, if you just worked a miracle in Riley's life and I could just walk around and tell people how great and good you are, God?" Guess what? I buried Riley. Mm-hmm. I buried a child. And when my wife had cancer, it was the opposite. "Lord, your will be done." Well, the Lord healed her. Yeah. And you know, so why? I don't know. Why God chose one over the other, I don't know. But here's the point. I've been conformed more into his image. I've aligned myself more with his purposes and his will working in this world. And what it's made me do is to clutch the cross even more.
It's awesome.
And so through tragedy, through suffering, through pain, through prayer, we're not going to be provided with all the answers, but we're going to be provided with the means and the ultimate answer and the opportunity to present Christ.
Second question. Is prayer our only response?
No. As I said already, prayer is not our only response. I think love and compassion, as we already said, we need to start with that. Because going back to even your question, Steve, about with atheists, hey, why is all this happening? You guys believe in this God, but, you know, you've been praying, you've been saying all this, you'll put headlines on newspapers. But that's where you start with love and compassion. Yeah, I get it. Man, my heart is broken just like yours. I'm a human being like you are. Man, can we just stop and, think about this for a while? But then secondly, we have to provide answers. That's why we opened up, you know, with this idea of providing biblical theological answers, why we're giving resources, why we're telling people to go get books. Because let me say this, guys. We started off this broadcast with for a reason. President Obama has come up and said this multiple times, and we just played clips of those. It's not going to stop, guys. This isn't going to be something that is all of a sudden, this is it. This was the last one. It's going to continue. It was Paris attacks before that. It was Beirut before that. It was the downing of the Russian airplane before that. Now it's here in America. We Christians need to get off our tushes and start looking to the Bible and providing answers when people ask, because guess what? We have a world watching. Yeah. We have a world wondering. And we have a world that's going to be saying, why? And we need to provide cogent, clear, reasoned answers when they come. Who else are they going to turn to?
Mm-hmm.
They're going to say, why? And what an opportunity for us to go, you know what? Here's why we think, but here's the ultimate answer.
Yeah, absolutely. It is Theology Thursday. Still got a few minutes left of the show if you'd like to chime in. We got some comments on Facebook. Wanted to at least get to them, read them, because there are some thoughts on the story as well. Facebook.com/Star88FM. You want to just go down the list? Or,
sure.
Yeah.
Arrow says, is it perhaps that we have evicted God from our culture and country? This is fascinating of how we choose to live with the ramifications of choosing to reject God. Sort of like Sotsel, whatever, in Russia, where he commented likewise of how his country has forgotten God, which led to the revolution. I think it's so easy and tempting to accept these disasters in a schizoid manner and become cold and callous, but I think about history and how God's light seems to shine even through the darkest moments. Maybe we just need hope.
Yeah, who wrote that?
Arrow.
Arrow, thanks for the question. And it is a fascinating sociological study of how cultures who do dismiss God, the way I look at it is, though a culture could dismiss God, God's love for people is always there. Mm-hmm. It's not like God stops loving. But what God can do, I think, and we find this biblically, particularly with the nation of Israel, God could say, okay, you want to do it on your own? Go for it.
Yeah.
And that's what we saw with, and by the way, I don't see the thing, but it's maybe Solzhenitsyn Heisen who wrote about the Russian.
That's it.
The Russian. And maybe we're finding that here in America, where we're saying, hey, God, we could do this without you. So God would be saying, hey, my love for you is always there.
Man.
I love you purely and deeply, and I want you to, you know, have a relationship with me. But you know what? If you want to do this, if you want to dance alone, go ahead. It goes back to the great Christian thinker, Werner Eller, who wrote a book called War and Peace, from Genesis to Revelation. And he was dealing with this idea of why would God allow war, you know, in the Old Testament, and then in the New Testament, you know, there seems to be a more peaceful standing. Well, Werner Eller kind of comes to the conclusion of that in the Old Testament, God was purely justified. It was basically God leading and rooting out cancer. Then humanity came forward and said, oh, we got this, God. Let us take care of this. And then you start seeing God saying, hey, this isn't justified war. You're not doing this according to pure purposes. These are man-led endeavors. And then getting back to first principles, when Christ came, God saying, let me build the kingdom. Let me build it as I wanted to build it, and we're going to do it through the Messiah, Jesus Christ. So I think, you know, back to these, you know, this notion is we could be in an era where God's saying, I'm taking my hands off this. You think you guys want to do this?
Well, and that's how do we line that up with when Jesus said that we are the hands and the feet? You know, we're his representation on earth, because it's a lot. I think it's really easy to just say, for me, this is for me talking. It's really easy for me to say, here are the reasons why this is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And leave, and I will pray. And that's it, though. But
yeah.
And so then, like, as am I using, like, well, obviously we've walked away from God, so this is just going to keep happening.
Yeah, no.
Am I using that as an excuse?
That's where we need to combat that. We need to combat
that's
an
what I
apathetic.
Know. How do we do that?
Well, we do it
practically.
We practically are the hands and Paul put it this way: we're the ambassadors of Christ.
Right.
We go out, and this, if anything, should give us more and more impetus, more and more momentum to proclaim the gospel, to do good deeds in the world. When there's darkness, my friends, we light the candle.
I like that.
So each and every one of us need to light our candles. We need to proclaim with unabashed fervor the good news of Christ's kingdom. But then the flip side is we need to go out and serve the homeless.
Mm-hmm.
We need to go out and help the orphans and the widows. We need to go out and, you know, and as crazy as it sounds, help the birds down in South Africa.
Mm-hmm.
We need to be people who are doing good. Not to be saved. We're not doing goods to be saved. We're saved unto good works. So the moment that transformation happens, the moment you're born from above, that the Holy Spirit comes and resides in you, you thank God, you proclaim that gospel, but then we're saved to go out and be light bearers.
And I think there is power, I think we would all agree on this, in prayer alone and that not being, you know, oh, well, that's obviously not enough, because sometimes that absolutely is enough. Because we mm-hmm. talked to chaplains who are out on scenes of crimes, and the simple fact of them being there was enough. I remember when we were talking about, being out, I was mentioning being out at Walgreens and the animosity I received when it was like, hey, can we pray for you?
Mm.
But that wasn't what you received, right? Because when we were talking about it,
it was
like, people were like, whoa,
mm-hmm.
yeah. And so I think screw the talking heads in the New York Daily News who say that there's no power there, because that's exactly what it is. It's a talking head who's using it as a political stance mm-hmm. to enact more gun control
yeah.
laws.
Absolutely.
And you know what our response should be?
Huh.
Pray more.
Yeah, right.
Love more. Go out and be that candle
mm-hmm.
in the community of darkness. And when you're that, you are saying more than just doing Facebook posts, which if the Facebook posts are reasoned and rational, great, do it. But go out and be that light.
Because I got to be, I look at it and I get frustrated and I think, man, and I, it's just a testament to where I'm in my faith at times, because I go, oh, what if it isn't doing anything? Maybe I should just stop praying. And how do I actually, that doesn't do anything. And so then I feel like for me personally, I'm limiting the true power of prayer, because maybe I am.
Well, and
maybe I'm not utilizing
it. I'm falling in with that too, because like when it comes to prayer, we just talked about, how many times do I just say I'm praying for something, and in reality, I don't give a crap about it? You know, I don't care. Yeah. I don't care. And another thing is, a lot of times in situations, we forget that it's God's will for the betterment of someone else. So when we're praying for someone else, we're like, God, this would really help me out if you would do this. But we're praying for someone else, which is totally different. But my thing, too, I'm sorry to interrupt. I find myself caught in a place where it's like, we are praying for this, really want God to change it.
Yeah.
Is there anything else I can do?
Yeah.
I recognize the power of prayer. I know it's real. I know it happens. I know it works. But then practically, what does it take for me to live as a Christian and be a light in the world? Because I'm sick of just talking on the radio and saying, God is love, Jesus is love, I hope you like that. What else can I do?
Yeah.
Can I, and not to earn anything,
right,
just to be that example, to live that faith out.
Because we're in prayer, let me just take a moment to just really quick unpack the Lord's Prayer. It begins with Our Father in Heaven. Just notice there and there, in that text, there's a relationship. It's a God who loves you, a God who cares for you. It's a Father God. Then it says, hallowed be your name. Hallowed is holy. It's a time of prayer. It's a time of praise. So you begin by recognizing a God who is there, who's watching over you, who cares for you. You're to praise him, to honor him. And then it says, your kingdom come. Notice that. It's God's kingdom that's coming. Your will be done. Prayer is to align ourselves with God's will. And then it says, on earth as it is in heaven. So we are enacting, we are kingdom builders on earth. We're representatives. We're light and salt, as Jesus would say, on this earth, allowing God to work through us as ambassadors to build his kingdom. And then Jesus takes it from a vertical, upward-looking prayer to a horizontal, human-looking prayer. Give us this day our daily bread. So it turns to very practical. Lord, provide for us on a daily need. And forgive us our debts, that forgiveness, as we forgive our debtors. So we're to be forgiven and forgiving people. And then it says, do not lead us into temptation, but deliver us from the evil one. For yours is the kingdom and the power and the glory forever. In the midst of this, Mateo, to answer your question, is we're to align ourselves with God's kingdom. And we're to be those people who are about the world, allowing God to use us, to infuse us with his spirit, to impact our culture. And that is in any small way where we are shedding the love of Christ in the world. So do you have to be out there at the homeless shelter every day? No. But when you see your neighbor, or you see your coworker, and you could just say, hi, how are you doing? Maybe go and ask him to prayer. That is sharing the love of God in Christ. Mm-hmm. To be that light, to ignite that candle in a world of darkness is so important.
We're just about out of time, but before we go, we talked about, if God, why evil?
Can I recite some of those? Because I've already had two.
And I would love you to add on to that
I've already got two texts from people saying, hey, say those again. Yeah. Where are they? So here they are again. The more philosophical, heady one, and I will say that it's very difficult to get through. It's called God, Freedom and Evil by Alvin Plantinga. He is one of the leading philosophers in the world. So you could take that as to the type of book it is.
Okay.
Something a little bit more approachable is Ravi Zacharias's Why Suffering. Mm. Ravi Zacharias is a brilliant communicator, brilliant thinker, but he also has the wonderful ability to take hard concepts and bring them down.
And if you're reading his words, the accent doesn't come through, much easier to like decipher.
True.
then you have Norman Geisler's If God, Why Evil. That it is a little bit more approachable. It's not as heady as Alvin Plantinga. And then you have The End of Christianity by William Dembski. He's telling it from a scientific vantage point, but it is very, very interesting how he does it, and it's a great book. And then the other two I referenced, which we don't have in our bookstore, but you could get them online, and they are honestly, I think two of the best ways to handle this, because they're approachable, but they're very solid. And they're both by A.E. Wilder Smith, who is a Christian scientist, not, you know, of the denominational, but he's a Christian who is also a scientist.
Yeah.
And one is called Why Does God Allow It? And the other is This a God of Love? Mm. So Why Does God Allow It? And Is This a God of Love? I would say that for someone who just really wants some very clear reasoning, rationale, I would begin with A.E. Wilder Smith's books because they're easy to read, they're short, and then move on to the others. But both of those, I believe, are published by The Word for Today. I was privileged to work on these books later on after A.E. Wilder Smith died. We compiled them in one book, so I worked on these. But they truly are amazing books.
Now, I have one more before we go, and I don't want to overload people with resources, but we always provide the resources at star88.fm. Mm-hmm. We have an end cap here at Parchments Bookstore on the Calvary campus for you to pick them up. But as we talk about prayer and it being a meaningless, you know, platitude versus it being, you know, a conversation with God, off the top of your head, can you name a couple of resources on the power of prayer, the importance of prayer, or a book that we just, hey, you need to read this.
Yeah, yes. I mean, some that really talk about the philosophical notion of prayer. That, and I know it kind of sounds funny, but Pastor Chuck's book it's called Prayer.
Okay.
Our Glorious Privilege. He does talk about some of the elements of, like, when God says no.
Okay.
And prayer's accomplishments.
Okay.
And so I would begin that. But, you know, E.M. Bounds has a book on prayer. Richard Foster has a book on prayer. There are so many marvelous books on prayer out there, and we have them at the bookstore as well.
Perfect. Okay, there you go. Yeah, I know, as we talk about it, you know, it can seem like, man, I'm praying and praying and praying, mm-hmm. and yet all of this tragedy, all of the crap that we're seeing in the world, what's it good for type thing.
Mm-hmm.
I definitely could use that resource as well. So
yeah.
Thanks to everyone for chiming in today.
And thanks for Nathan, our guest, who listened and was able to get on. He and his sisters got some free cool Star 88 t-shirts.
Yeah, there you go. If you miss any part of the podcast, you can download it absolutely free at star88.fm. Next week's special guest, big time, man. We're excited for Theology Thursday. We hope you are too. Until mañana, that's it for us. It's Steve on tail and they am.
Goodbye.
Theology Thursday is intended to be an informational, Bible-based discussion on issues and questions that listeners present. Hosts, pastors, and guests attempt to provide reliable, accurate information. If you have additional questions or concerns, please contact the pastoral staff at Calvary Albuquerque.